All right, guys, welcome to episode 6 of The Climb. This is a show dedicated to helping singers, songwriters, and indie artists like you create leverage in the music business. As a matter of fact, that's literally what The Climb means. It's an acronym that stands for Creating Leverage in the Music Business. I want to introduce you to my wonderfully talented co-host, Mr. Brent Baxter. Brent is an award-winning hit songwriter with cuts by Alan Jackson, Randy Travis, Lady Antebellum, Joe Nichols, and many more. He is a monster songwriter, people. He also helps songwriters like you turn pro by teaching the art and the craft and the business of songwriting. And you can find Brent at manvsro.com. That's manvsro.com. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. And I just want to introduce y'all to my co-host, Johnny Dwinell. Johnny owns Daredevil Production. It's an innovative artist development company. Not only do they develop and improve your artistry, they also grow and monetize your fan base, creating what? Cash flow. Daredevil has worked with multi-platinum artists like Colin Ray, Tracy Lawrence, Ty Herndon, and Andy Griggs, just to name a few. You can find Johnny at Daredevil Production. That's Production, singular, no S, daredevilproduction.com. Hey, Johnny. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, brother. How are you, man?
I am doing well. I'm ready to learn from you today. Let you drive this bus, and I will learn from you.
I'm excited. You know, when it comes to songwriters or when it comes to artists, one of the biggest hurdles that we deal with as an artist development company is just kind of talking them off the ledge a lot because we're artists, right? I was an artist too. I mean, they're worried about making a mistake. And a lot of times fear of making a mistake, which sometimes comes with baggage from your childhood, you know, depending on how your parents dealt with when you spilled the milk when you were four, can translate into how ruthless or not ruthless is the bad word. I guess how avant-garde you can be, how willing you are to take a risk in the future, in your adult life. And so I want to talk today about how is an experiment different from a mistake on a creative level. But I'm not just talking about creative as far as song lyrics or melodies, creating a song, creating a sound with your as an artist or with a band or as a producer, but even in some of the more important stuff, which is the taboo word that no artists want to talk about, which is marketing. Be creative in your marketing. Brent, you and I have conversations on a semi-regular basis about different ideas and share ideas about marketing. Hey, I tried this and this totally sucked, but this worked over here. And let me tell you why. And then we both, I feel, upped our game and upped our exposure and upped our ability to connect with the audience that we want to connect with because we shared information and we're willing to take a risk, right?
Oh, yeah. I've had some stuff that has not worked. I've done some stuff that's worked.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I've had some stuff that's worked until it didn't work. And then it didn't work. And then you had to go on. Right. You know, I mean, that's happened too. So how is an experiment different from a mistake? So many people are afraid of making a mistake. And in my definition here, a mistake is just defined as an experiment that's gone on too long. It's that simple. And that's preventable. But experiment is part of the equation. I mean, I hate the word failure because I believe a failure, it sounds so negative, but it's something that's absolutely necessary. A failure is a consequence that refines your process.
Yeah, right? I've heard it said recently that there is no failure, only feedback.
See, I like that. And I mean, let me ask you this. Like when you were writing Monday Morning Church, top five song for Alan Jackson, iconic country artist. When you were writing that song, I mean, did you just literally write out the over 14 lines of prose and it just came out and it was perfect?
It's still not perfect. No, I didn't.
There was lots of experiments in there, right?
There was hacking away at it. There was a whole second verse, which I scrapped and rewrote right before I brought the lyric into my co-writer on that, Aaron Enderlin. So, yeah, there's a whole lost verse to that thing that I went and rewrote and you know, tightened up. It was like a year or two later and tried to make it better before I presented it to a co-writer. So, yeah, and that wasn't a failed verse. And I know a lot of times when we're writing, you know, I was writing with Anthony Oreo and Matt Klein last night. And Anthony and I were talking about this song that we were writing with a guy named Jason Cox. And we were writing the simplest chorus, and it took forever. And we were joking at the time, like, people are going to hear this and think, this took like 30 seconds to think of because it's so simple. But it took us for, you know, a couple hours to get it where we wanted it. And then we ended up scrapping the whole thing anyway and just totally chunking what we had. And you know, we were laughing about that. But he's like, you know what? That became our bridge. You know, so this whole thing, instead of looking at it as a, it wasn't a failed chorus, it was just, it was a good bridge.
That's right. Well, that, well, there you go. I mean, and when we talk about this, I mean, I think that this is where a lot of artists get hung up because it creates unnecessary frustration in your writing. It creates unnecessary frustration in your, as an artist. It creates unnecessary frustration when it comes to marketing your product, and you just feel like the world's against you. But the reality is, you're looking at it wrong. You know, there's the old adage, you can't see the forest through the trees. When you're down in the forest, if you're not aware, and this sounds totally stupid, but it's kind of a really good analogy. If you're not aware that the trees can't move, right? Just think about it. The trees would be really scary, as tall and as big as they are, if they could actually move toward you and surround you. If you're not aware that's what's going on, you could freak out and lose it, right? And become really scared and really frustrated and shut her down and get the hell out of the forest. But once you realize that they're planted there and you can walk around them, all of a sudden you can navigate through the forest, right? So it's putting frustration into a proper perspective. I promise you, if you're frustrated, that's a good thing because that means you want to go farther. But I also going to submit to you that it's your fault. and I mean that in a bad way. But I mean, it's like, look, it's fixable, but you're the one that has to do it. And it's what you're not doing now. So I think, you know, when we talk about understanding that failure is a consequence that refines your process, okay? And an experiment is good. Experiment is necessary. Edison literally went through 2,000 versions of the light bulb before he figured out how to do it right. And people would often ask him in the newspapers after that, because that was a life-changing incandescent, you know, that was a big, changed the world, right?
It was the original light bulb moment.
Yeah, that's right. Boom, there you go. The original first one, right? Yeah. And people were like, you know, how do you feel about, you know, failing 2,000 times? Because I didn't fail 2,000 times. I found 2,000 ways not to make a light bulb. And that led him to the right way. So it'll drive, people say it'll drive me crazy. But the definition of crazy is doing the same experiment over and over and over again and expecting different results. So once you can see it for what it is, which is an experiment, and once you can see that a failed experiment is nothing but a speed bump, a pothole, and not only is it a speed bump, and not only is it a pothole, but it is in fact predictable. You should expect to have that.
Meaning maybe you can't predict each particular, say, failure or pothole, but you can expect that they will occur.
That's my point. Yeah. You're going to happen. I mean, you can't just sit down and expect to, you know, write a 10 line song in exactly 10 lines of prose. Okay. Like you said, it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of scrap thoughts in this direction, that direction. Then finally you hone it down. You expect that as a songwriter. You should also expect that as an artist. You should also expect that with the marketing, with your marketing.
Which is
a big sort of scary thing for people, but it's not that difficult. You know, I mean, I'm really good at marketing, and I promise you, I'm not the smartest guy on this Google share thing right now. This podcast.
No, that's a pretty low bar. But you know, like with the writing thing, I mean, all those songs I wrote that weren't cut before Monday Morning Church. Okay. Cause Monday Morning Church was my first major cut. Okay, so all those songs before that, were they failures? No. I was learning. I would send songs in to get feedback, you know, get pro feedback on. And so it was a learning process. And I was building those muscles, taking chances, finding my voice. Those songs were not failures, even though there's no way I pitch those to a publisher, pitch those to an artist today.
Right.
Because they're not worthy of that. But they are worthy, you know, they were worthy to get me to that next song, to get me to that next step, to learn that next little rhyming trick or whatever it is. They weren't failures.
That's right.
Steps along the way.
Think about it. Here's another metaphor that I think is really good, but it's so stupidly simple that we all take it for granted, right? Unless you have some kind of major physical disability, you're godlike at tying your shoes. Right? Think about that.
And you didn't used to
be. You do it, you're thinking about 20 other things, and you're not even looking while you tie. It's effortless for you. It's an extension of who you are when you tie your shoes. But there was a point in time when you didn't know how to tie your shoes.
You looked at those ends and just burst into tears, probably. Yeah,
like, I don't know how to do this, you know? And then who showed you? Your mom or your dad or your aunt or your aunt? Somebody who was taking care of you showed you how to tie your shoes. And did you just watch it once and then nail it?
Not at all. No. That rabbit missed that hole so many times. That's right.
Around the tree and up through the hole, down through the hole. How's that work?
I wear boots.
I'm going to wear Velcro, right? Like, I mean, it's lots of failed experiments that got you to the point of creating effortless, where you expect to win. Every single time you put your feet into a pair of shoes that have laces with them. And so, you know, I want people to go back and remember that it was a process. It was a journey. Mm-hmm. It was not something that happened and was either, and it was built on a bunch of little failures and then one consistent success. Right. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You probably do it every day, just about, you know, so go ahead.
One thing I was thinking about, you know, you hear about these comedians that go out and they do like their HBO special. That's not the first time they've done that set. They've done it over and over, and they've gone out and they practiced in front of live audiences in small clubs and that kind of stuff. And they worked on their stuff, and that's where they found out which jokes didn't work, which ones didn't get a laugh, and they learned which ones to cut. And was that a failure that joke didn't get a laugh? Well, not really. It was, you know, they're working toward this bigger goal of getting their HBO special just right. So it's feedback, and they need that feedback. It's like, oh, you're not going to laugh? Great. I need to know this song, this joke doesn't work, so I can strike it or I can rewrite it. You think about it, that would be just a big old string of failures, but it's not. All those failures lead to that success of honing that act and that bit before they go on Leno or whatever, you know.
They make it look easy, but it took a lot of speed bumps and potholes and lots of different forms. I want to share a story with you. This is a true story. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Everybody knows who he is. You know, movie star, Mr. Olympia. I don't know how many years in a row.
Killer robot.
Yeah, came from poverty in Austria. And moved to this country, and it is the kind of brain that just is focused on success. Long before he was a movie star and long before he's Mr. Olympia, he was successful in the real estate industry because he needed to do something on the side. But let's focus on, I want to focus on his bodybuilding here. I learned this through some paid coaching that I went through a Ty Lopez course, but it's fascinating to me. Arnold has small calves, or I should rephrase. Arnold had small calves. Bodybuilder who wants to become Mr. Olympia, this is a no-no. You have to have big calves. Mm-hmm. And
I'm also a fair rancher, but that's a whole different. Yeah, that's something else.
But he, because this all comes into awareness and understanding and experiment and being afraid to try something, right? So he sought out a mentor and found this bodybuilder guy. I can't remember his name. He's down in South Africa. And Arnold flies to South Africa to work out with this guy, to learn from him how to improve his body. And one of the points of attention that, you know, on the scope of work that they were going to cover was his calves. How do I get my calves up? In his mind, in Arnold's mind, he thought if he puts more than 250 pounds on a bar and does X amount of calf raises, that it's going to hurt his leg and all this stuff's going to happen. He's going to ruin his calves and da 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 da. And the guy's like, no, you got to put more weight in the bar. You got to put 1,000 pounds in the bar and you got to do twice the amount of calf raise that you're doing. Arnold's like, arguing with him, like, no, you can't do that. You're going to hurt your calf, you know. Then he's like, no, dude, I'm telling you. And he went and he did it. He watched his mentor do it. Then all of a sudden it became possible, like the 4-minute mile, right?
Yeah, just think of that.
Until one guy
did it.
And then everybody did it because they saw it could be done. So as soon as Arnold did that, he started doing that. And just like that, his calves started to grow in muscle mass. So he was afraid to take a chance. He was frustrated with, and I hope you see the analogy here. He's frustrated with growing his calves. But you know what he had done? Even Arnold, who was like, I think one of my heroes as far as drive,
he gets stuff
success,
done.
He gets it done. Yeah. If he decides he's going to do it, he gets it done. He does it smart. Mm-hmm. He moves on. He's not afraid to lose. He's not afraid to fail. And he goes forth. But he creates a little story in his head.
Mm-hmm.
The story was inaccurate. Here's why I can't do this. And he's got an excuse for himself because it's going to cause injury and da 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 da. And it took some guy to dispel the myth and say, no, that's wrong. And I think that a lot of artists have that in their artist careers. I think that a lot of songwriters have that in their songwriter career. Here's why I can't make it. I'm frustrated in this and that because of this, because of that, because of this, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is proof positive that even with Arnold Schwarzenegger, mega successful Arnold Schwarzenegger, there's a man who says he can and a man who says he can't. And both men are right.
But you
are you know, and for the women too, same thing. But it really is like we as human beings create rackets, protection rackets in our head because we're frustrated with something. We create a reason why we can't do it to justify and sell to ourselves that we're okay. You know, I'll ask my artists all the time when they start telling me about this and here's why I can't do that. And I'll just ask them one question. I'm like, are you trying to convince me or yourself? They start stuttering. I'm like, I'm honest question. Like, let me know, you know?
Right.
So I want people to focus on that. I mean, what do you want your artist life to look like?
Mm-hmm.
There is no right or wrong answer to that question. That's the question I want everybody to ask today and put your comments down below. What do you want your artist life to look like? If you are, one of the sultans of swing and you're saving it up all week long because you got a job, day job, and you're doing all right, and then you're saving it up for Friday night, God bless. Make it happen. You know, if you want to be a professional writer, if you want to be a professional artist to make a living, professional means I make a living doing that task, then that's also a correct answer. But where you will run into frustration is if you're mismatching the goal with the amount of work that's required.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not okay for you to be frustrated and say, I really, really, really want to make it, but I'm only spending, 5 hours a week on my artist career.
You know what I call that, Johnny?
What's that?
I call that shambition.
Shambition?
Shambition.
Oh, that's so good. I'm going to steal that.
Oh, I'll give it away, man. I put it up on Instagram. It's where you talk like, you have big goals and you talk like you want success, but you work like you couldn't care less. That is shambition.
That's right. And I'm going to share something here. Just give everybody a little bit of positivity here. This has been done in several different experiments, and this is the key to success in anything. But oh my gosh, so much in the entertainment industry, in specifically, we're talking to singers, songwriters, and artists here. But did you know this, that 50% of people will quit after the first failure?
Wow.
80% of people will quit after the second failure. 95% of people will quit after the third failure.
Wow.
So
if you just stick it out after four, you're in.
Wow, you're in a totally different ballgame.
Right?
That's classic David versus Goliath, and there's your advantage. Be willing to fail more than three times.
Mm-hmm.
Expect it. Be willing to fail more than three times, and then you'll start to see things come into focus for you. And that involves, understanding the difference between, to bring it back around, an experiment and a mistake. Mm-hmm. Be willing to experiment. Don't let an experiment that's failing go on for too long. Learn from it. Change direction. Don't keep doing the same thing. Write with different people if your songs aren't getting heard. Learn from some other people. If you're an artist, there's a different way to market yourself. I don't want people to be afraid to market themselves.
Right.
My gosh, we've got three artists right now that we're working with that are not One just got a publishing deal, but before when we were working with her, she didn't have a publishing deal. One girl's 12 years old, another girl's 16 years old, and we've got a jazz singer that's in I don't even know her age. She's an adult and a doctor, but these people, their social media is exploding because of what we're doing. I just figured this out. I mean, I just was willing to screw around with it and play around with it and spend some time on it because I saw something that was interesting. Like, this is an incredible way to reach people to connect artists with fans who are going to be willing to like that. I want to see if I could do that. And we're doing it. I mean, Bailey James is over 27 or 28,000 Instagram followers. She's 12 years old. She's never performed her like a real gig where she did more than two songs in a row. You know what I mean? Think about that, people. That's all social media, her making relationships, her keeping in contact with people, not being afraid at 12 years old to make a mistake.
Right.
And just trying it. And now every post that she puts up, she has a solid average of 600 likes per post, a solid average of 85 comments per post. Her rate, her numbers don't blow away Carrie Underwood, but her ratio of how many comments versus how many likes she gets is more than five times what Carrie Underwood's is.
Wow.
So her audience percentage wise is much more engaged on a per capita basis than Carrie Underwood's at 2.4 million followers. Mm-hmm. So it's something to think about, people, that that this can be done and you can find your audience, but you've got to be willing to take a chance. You've got to be willing to take a risk. You pay a little money to learn. Right. Mm-hmm. And then go out there and go forth and figure it out. So we want you to win here. So that wraps up what I was covering here, the difference between an experiment and a mistake. To give you perspective, expect, eat the challenges for breakfast. They're coming every single day. So get used to them and don't crumble and get frustrated over it. Just figure out, okay, I got to get over that hurdle. How are we going to do that? What's the smartest way to do it and move forward? So having said that, I want to tell you that Mr. Brent Baxter here is quite a philanthropist, if you will. He shares this information, and he has an incredible book that will teach you how to be a better pro songwriter. He's giving it away for free. Mm-hmm. Brent, turn him on to this. Tell him where they can get this.
I have a free ebook that is my gift to you. It's called Think Like a Pro Songwriter, and you can find it at giftfrombrent.com. That's giftfrombrent, BRENT.com. You just tell me where to send it, put your email address in. We send it right out to you. No charge. It's yours. Download it. It's a PDF and gives you insight into a lot of the mindsets of pro songwriters like myself. It gives you tips on like basically how we find out who's looking for songs to record so we can get our songs to them, that kind of stuff. It talks about, you know, six simple ways to make your songs more commercial, that kind of stuff. So giftfrombrent.com. Go check it out, download it, and most of all, put it to work. But I'm not the only one that has a book. Johnny, you have a bestseller that you're giving away, even though it's a bestseller.
That's right. It's a Twitter book. It's How to Market Your Music on Twitter. It's the most amazing tool that you can use to target an audience, no matter how select that audience is, to create a relationship and to deepen the relationship. And it's a facilitator to monetize the relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so... it's so fantastic. And we have a book that I wrote to demystify Twitter. So we show you how everything works. We it's literally a tour through the app. It shows you what this does, what this does, mm-hmm. what this does, the do's and the don'ts. And then also we give you a strategy and show you the tools that we use around Twitter to target and help you gain 1,000 loyal targeted fans every single month for just 15 minutes of work a day. We show you how to do work. We show you how to work intelligently with it and get done what you need to get done. So you can get that book. It is a bestseller, but we are giving it away for free. So figure that out. It's giftfromjohnny.com, giftfromjohnny.com. And that wraps up episode 6 of The Climb, Creating Leverage in the Music Business. Thanks again to my co-host, Brent Baxter. Yes. My name is Johnny Dwinnell, and Brent and I.
Yes. If you have questions, comments, put them at the bottom of the YouTube. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, we would appreciate it if you'd hop on over to iTunes, give us a rating or review. The more positivity you put into ratings and reviews, and the more you talk about us, then the more we go up in the rankings and the more visibility we have. So more singers, songwriters, independent artists like you can find us and that we can help more people that way. So we'd appreciate it. So that's one way you can get back to us.
If you go and if you find it beneficial, if you find this stuff beneficial, share it.
Spread the word.
Make sure everybody knows. Spread the word. Mm-hmm. All right. We got a reputation. Do us a favor. Spread it around. All right, guys. Well, that's it for The Climb, episode 6. We'll see you at the top.
Take care.